Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi, 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 a podcast in which three random guys review audiobooks of a science fictional or fantastical or horrifical nature.
Yay!
Yay!
All of reality is a horror show.
Barry's in a great mood today.
yes, I am.
Yo, yay, nihilism.
Yo, yay, nihilism, which, of course, is our new slogan.
Indeed.
With a side of Arby's.
Arr. So,
Pirate Day has come and gone.
Yes. Kevin, what did we read this week?
Well, reread part two of the Necronomicon, the confusingly titled selection of H.P. Lovecraft stories, which is not actually the Necronomicon referred to in H.P. Lovecraft stories.
I mean, are we sure?
Well, nobody's actually seen it, so we don't really know for sure, but I'm guessing probably not.
Is there a simple indicator test to see if we're all insane yet?
No. You can't tell yourself.
No, you can't like pee on a stick or something.
I mean, if you pee on a stick, you might be insane. Just depends on where, when, and why you do it.
So maybe it's someone else's stick. I don't know.
If for some reason you're not aware of H.P. Lovecraft, he wrote stories in the 20s and 30s for pulp magazines that had elements of horror and science fiction and other stuff. The selection of stories that you read for this week included The Music of Eric Zahn, The Shadow Out of Time, The Dunwich Horror, or if you're from California, The Dunwich Horror.
Sounds delicious.
Yes. The Haunter of the Dark, The Outsider, The Shunned House, The Unnameable, The Thing on the Doorstep, and Under the Pyramids.
Okay. So what did everybody think?
I enjoyed it.
Well, yes, we know you did.
Well, you know, obviously there was some variation in the stories.
I mean, you came here dressed as Yogg-Sothoth.
Yeah.
All right, Barry, what did you think?
I was terrified. I actually liked the back half of this book much better than the first half.
That's true.
I think he had sort of refined his art a little bit.
Well, I'm not sure if these were chronological, were they?
They were not, but it's true that there are more stories that were from the late 20s and the mid 30s in the back half of the book. In the first half, there were more in the 20s. So, but yeah,
I also, they were roughly in chronological order.
I also liked
the way I'm going to read that.
It's not true, but I won't go through the list of all the dates just to make everyone's life less horrible.
Why start now?
Thank you, Mr. Vague.
All right, let me go through the list of dates.
No. Okay.
I have goaded him into it.
Yeah, please don't call his bluff.
I triple dog dare you.
Moving on. Yeah, so I also thought that these stories were better than the first half. I also discovered I'm not sure Lovecraft is my thing. I like things that are good and not horrifying.
And I mean, bunnies this is unicorns.
Well, no, those are terrifying. I mean,
that's right. In one edition of D&D, unicorns were evil.
In the other versions, then we just had the unicorn propaganda machine.
Isn't that the bronies?
That too. But definitely these are in some ways more refined stories. But on the other hand, I just found that I was listening to it at triple pace for a couple of reasons. One, I had to get it done last night because I put it off for too long. And two, I was just like, oh God, just don't describe anything. Just stop describing things. I know you're good at it, but you know, your narrators never move. It's basically like, you know, listening to a guy on the phone describe the exact contents of his house.
So what you're saying is you want an audible feature that has the adjective reduction mode.
Exactly. Yes. And half of his house is indescribable. My absolute favorite was when he seemed to be arguing directly back against me with The Unnameable, where
right
the first
he goes
half
on
is,
at length.
Yeah, the first half is somebody saying, how could things be unnameable? Why is so much of your stuff unnameable?
Right.
And it's just like, well, some of it is. Like, ooh, that house over there. Ooh.
It's a house. You just named it.
By the way, that's pretty scary. Hey, this goes well, considering that these were, in theory, supposed to be sort of Halloween episodes.
Right, right. We're releasing these now, theoretically, because we're approaching Halloween time, which is one of my favorite times of the year.
Who doesn't love a bunch of Yidnac?
What's Yidnac?
Candy backwards.
Wow.
Are you just saying things backwards now, or?
Well, if you say it backwards three times, doesn't it appear?
No, that's just Candyman.
Oh.
Or Yidnak Nam, or Nam Yidnak. I don't know. Yidnak,
Yidnak, Yidnak. I don't know.
It would be a rather bizarre horror movie. I mean, it would be rather like America Today, but, you know, if the horror movie were just when you said candy in the mirror three times, then candy appeared behind you.
It only works on Halloween.
I mean,
only your shadow can eat it, though.
I mean,
if it's really the Candyman, right? I do have the bees outside.
You just text Yidnak to somebody else and then something bad happens.
But this raises an interesting point. What if Lovecraft had been hired to write children's books?
I think we'd have a lot of terrified, I don't know.
Be like, and the dog of indescribable terror bounded rigorously into the hideous house.
Well, I mean, that was sort of a writing style of the time, right? So it's not like it's nobody else was long-winded. That was sort of Victorian-ish.
Was it the sign of you know, being educated, was using a lot of extra words that you didn't possibly
because
didn't
they
need.
Need they knew them, so they have to show that.
It's like the lack of strong editors back then.
Well, and then about half of the time, like, I started playing a game with myself as to, you know, how quickly did he say the word hideous? Because almost always the word
hideous,
I have a new ringtone, would be in the first paragraph of the story.
Yes. I think my favorite first line is the one where, for the thing on the doorstep where he basically said, you know, paraphrase, well, I did just shoot my best friend six times in the head, but with this story, I'm going to try to show that it wasn't really my, you know, it wasn't really him. I wasn't murder. I was doing something good for him.
It was therapeutic.
Therapeutic murder.
He wanted me to, so it's okay.
So, yeah, my overall advice is Lovecraft is a potent thing, but should be taken in small doses.
I think that's true, that if you read them all right after each other as fast as you possibly can, you kind of lose the spookiness to some degree of it.
Right.
Especially, you know, three times speed. And I will say that, you know, so maybe this is just me. I don't know, that there were times where I found that I was drifting, and I would come back, you know, from driving in the car, and I would be like, oh, I just missed like half an hour, I think. What was happening? And then I would rewind and I would miss it again. And then, like,
how did I miss my exit by 35 miles?
Yeah. So, and then, like, I re-listened to all the stories since I'd finished early. And like, there were entire sections that I'm like, oh, that story made much more sense now, because somehow I missed this like pivotal part of it the first time. And,
Well, that's also, you know, this is also one of the reasons we split this into two recordings, right? Is that we sort of realized in the beginning it kind of loses something when you start to binge read these.
Right, exactly.
So it all kind of melts together, at least it did for me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess since we're technically still not spoiling stuff, I'll just say, you know, The Shadow Out of Time and The Thing on the Doorstep were probably the ones I would recommend the most. The Dunwich Horror is probably one of the more famous ones, which wasn't bad either.
Right. Mine.
And of course, we'll have to have a special on The Shun House later, so you have to listen that far.
So, yeah, I think my favorite was The Outsider, because, and partially because I had actually heard that one in isolation before, and so I hadn't been ODing when I had listened to it before, and I really like the sort of historical grandeur approach to it, and the idea of this monster that just wants to join the party and, you know, get in on society, and everybody is, you know, reeling back from it all the time, and he doesn't realize what's going on until the end.
Yeah, I think The Outsider was also my favorite there in terms of sheer terror. So, I mean, like, you know, in terms of the sheer terror of The Outsider, you know, sort of never having had been in contact with, you know, anybody else, you know, in entire existence, it was particularly scary for me.
Okay.
It was,
yeah.
It was like a very psychological terror as opposed to,
right,
sort of, you know, a gruesome terror.
Right. And not the, like Stephen was saying, that where you have that problem with Lovecraft where he's kind of like, it's unnameable, it's this and that, I mean, we'll discuss this story more after the break, but I thought that was something that kind of stuck out, was how many times things were like couldn't be named, which works in isolation, I think, in a story every right. once in a while, where it's like, you know, because your brain will probably do a better job at filling in something horrible than for each individual person than the author might. But when every story, you know, is like that, after a while, you're like, seriously, this is a nameable too. Like, you know, I know you use a lot of adjectives. Find one.
I do kind of wonder if there's some unpublished story of his where he like just never gets around to actually like coalescing what it might possibly be. And it's just like, and then the unnameable did the unmentionable to the unutterable.
The unauthorized.
The loathsome. Yes. There are a few stories that start that way for sure.
Yes. Well, I'm feeling like my mind is being pushed out of my head by another more powerful mind, so I'm probably going to be removed from reality and trapped forever.
Is it physics?
Well, I don't know, but it's win-win, I guess.
It's unnameable.
But anyway, we, or perhaps people inhabiting us, will return, for we are sci-fi.
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 Hardware.
Yes. Hello. I wanted to.
Can you hold?
To...
Yeah. Hello. Hello.
Yes. I wanted to place an order for delivery.
Yeah.
Yes. I wanted to order a pickaxe and a spade and a gas mask.
So,
and...
are we talking your economy gas mask or military grade?
Maybe economy? I just placed a rather expensive order there, and funds are rather...
Wait a minute. You, the guy yesterday, was ordering the flamethrowers and the bug zapper?
The crook's tube? Yes.
Oh, yeah. How'd that work out for you?
Well, you see, my uncle was possessed and destroyed by a demoniac, rugose, insectoid, phosphorescent cloud of fungus loathsomeness, and so, for the good of humanity...
Well, there's no returns on those tubes, you know. Special order and all.
Well, I'm not worried about that now, but I also need some sulfuric acid.
Oh, gotcha. So it sounds to me like you want our special package, $50. You get the digging tools, you get the military-grade gas mask, and we'll throw in just a sec. Jimmy, how many of those carboys we got?
Six.
Okay, yeah, six carboys of sulfuric acid, no extra charge.
Oh my, six carboys. I was thinking I might need three or four carboys.
Buddy, it sounds to me like you're into some wicked supernatural stuff. Some guys like to mess around. They'll sell you four carboys of acid, but not Arkham, okay? We're going to go for the full six-pack. Now, you said you needed delivery?
Yes, to the shunned house.
Oh, the one on Pawtucket?
No, on Benefit Street.
Oh, yeah, the one near the church and the bed and breakfast. Got it. Okay, Jimmy, can you take that out tomorrow?
Absolutely.
Okay, see you tomorrow.
Thank you.
And welcome back to our discussion of the Necronomicon Part 2, where our discussion will mostly just be screaming about the unnameable and the unmentionable for about half an hour.
And the post-human beetle race, which kind of stuck out because it came up like three or four times in that one story, Shadow Out of Time. So it was this like phrase, I'm like, oh, somehow that works for me. I don't know why. It's like this bizarre like image, the post-human beetle race.
As opposed to the aquatic quadrupeds.
Or the post-beetle human race, which we currently are.
Yes.
So yes, in terms of discussion, Kevin, I think you wanted to talk about the mythos.
Yeah, so, you know, kind of going back to our previous episode too, a common thing that, you know, Lovecraft was, you know, friends with sort of a group of other like weird fiction authors.
Depends on where you put that comma.
Weird, yes. They probably all you know, came
eccentric,
under that.
Well, actually.
Eccentric, yes. So like there was another, you know, Robert E. Howard, you know, who wrote Conan and stuff was pretty famous still. But there's some other people that, you know, August Derleth, and Clark Ashton Smith, which actually I'd never heard of until I'd read these, but there's a whole section of those on Audible as well. And some other people, Robert Bloch, you know, that were kind of in that group, you know, informally would, you know, discuss this, you know, letters, I assume. And basically they all decided to kind of add to the Cthulhu mythos in their own stories. And so they didn't really, work very hard at trying to make sure they you know, they were cohesive or coherent or anything, but,
right.
But they would, you know, add to the thing. So,
well, I rather liked, what was it in, I think The Haunter of the Dark, which for me was a story that basically went, you know, afterwards, I'm just like, I don't remember that at all.
You're like, what happened in there? Yeah, it's weird because I have to look it up sometimes. Like, oh, that's right. That's that one.
But it was actually, you know, a sequel to a Robert Bloch story where the hero was Robert Blake.
Right. Well, this was the one that took place in the church and had the like the...
Right.
What? The weird icosahedron or whatever that was like the magical thing that was
sure,
bad.
But in this story, so Lovecraft kills off Robert Blake and just writes true Bloch saying, ha ha, I killed you.
Well, in the front, it says dedicated to Robert Bloch.
Well, yeah. I mean, this was obviously just some this sort of back and forth joke between the two of them, because apparently like then Bloch writes a sequel to that where he killed off, it turned out that Robert Blake was still alive and then he killed off a character based on Lovecraft.
So they kind of, yeah, because
according to Wikipedia.
Yeah, I thought that this one was a sequel to a Robert Bloch one. Is that what
it
you
is.
Said? Yeah. So that's pretty funny. You know, I guess that I can imagine that being something that we would do where it's like, oh, yeah. But what's funny is in that story, actually, he mentioned this, you know, kind of like the Necronomicon. There are other like, you know, tomes that all these authors would mention, including Lovecraft, about like, you know, it couldn't have just one bad one. You have to have a whole series of like, you know, hard to find relics that, you know,
right.
Talk about stuff. So Robert E. Howard had made up this one by Von Jungst called Unnameable Cult. So, you know, so Lovecraft's like, well, I'll throw that in. But of course, since Von Jungst is German, he just sort of, you know, he didn't know German, but he sort of said, well, that would be Unnasprechliche Kulten. And apparently, you know, a bunch of readers would write in and say, like, that's not really a very good translation.
Right. Weren't you telling me it would be the equivalent of cults whose names are really hard to pronounce?
Yeah, it's like tongue twister cults or something like that.
Which, to be fair, you know, Lovecraft would really like.
Yeah, it's like, oh, no, we weren't saying you couldn't talk about them. Just like they were really hard to pronounce.
AKA they weren't in English.
Right. And so actually the funny thing is apparently Robert Bloch or somebody else decided to use the same book, but he did a better translation in his opinion and, you know, renamed it a bit.
Wow. It's like 2 1-uppers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, this showed up in also Thing on the Doorstep, but then also in that story, he mentions Justin Joffrey, writer of The People of the Monolith, which was another story in another story by Robert E. Howard. Called like, I think The Blackstone or something. And so it was interesting because before I'd read all these, or at least recently I'd, you know, read some of those Robert E. Howard stories. And I was like, wait a minute, that sounds familiar. And then I'm like, oh, maybe this is one of those ones that kind of cross pollinated the other way. So I think it's kind of interesting because this, I don't know if this is the first time, but it's like kind of at least an early instance of kind of like a loose collection of authors kind of coming up with a common mythos of some kind, or, you know, world or whatever. So I thought that was interesting. And of course, I think that's what people know more now is the mythos rather than the specific stories.
Right. And Call of Cthulhu. And I mean, but it's a shared world that continues to exist to this day. I mean, Charlie Strauss is still writing in it, basically.
Right. And Barry has a copy of the Necronomicon over here. So.
Oh, is that what that was?
I have the original.
I was noticing that there were these flies that kept on buzzing directly at it and then screaming like small children.
I also have the Darkhold.
Read it! Read it! Yeah, and so, yeah, why do you keep on trying to make me read them?
It's for your own good. You'd like it.
Yes, okay. So during the review, I talked a little bit about The Unnameable, which, you know, I had mixed feelings about because it really did seem to be, you know, him having a bit of a joke and also defending himself because, you know, his main character, who wasn't that still Robert Blake or?
I think that was, I don't remember the name.
Right. But his main character was defending himself on, you know, why do you say everything's indescribable and unnameable all the time?
And what's funny is he was supposed to be an author, right?
Right.
So he's like, how, you know, he's like, I had this habit of saying things were unnameable and whatever. And he's like,
of course they could be named to describe, just use science and like, you know, whatever, you know, and then this horrible thing happens. And then at the end, you know, they, you know, the big long drawn out punchline, his skeptic friend is like, what was it? It was the unnameable.
Yeah. The skeptic gets its comeuppance there.
Yeah.
But
that'll learn them.
Actually, there was one good line in the story, which was, oh, but have you seen this house? Where is this house? I was just like, oh, you've seen it too. You last saw it before the sun went down. It's this house right here.
Right. It's like, damn it.
And I was so prepared for the narrator to say I was making the whole thing up, and the guy still freaked out.
At the end, the story just ends with psych.
All right. So do we want to unleash Kevin to talk about his favorite topic, Appendix N?
Sure. Well, let me wind him up a bit.
He doesn't need any winding up when it comes to Appendix N.
Yes.
Short recap, Appendix N is from the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Dungeon Master's Guide. Gygax said, hey, this is a list of stuff that inspired Dungeons & Dragons. You should read it or something. So
it may possibly inspire you to write better adventures.
Right. So he just listed H.P. Lovecraft. He didn't say any specific stories. But the interesting thing was, so the first edition of Deities and Demigods, which, you know, listed lots of different mythologies, you know, made up and not made up, depending on your opinion.
Co-opted.
Yes. You know, they had like Native American and other mythologies that are right in there. And so, you know, you can get stat blocks for all of them. How many hit points does, you know,
does Zeus have?
Yeah, exactly.
The answer is yes.
So they had all that stuff. So the first edition had Cthulhu Mythos and several other ones, which then they were sued, I believe, by somebody. So they just took out all the ones that could be lawsuit worthy just to make things easier. But it is interesting because I, after reading the stories and you go back, he gives, you know, there's a nice, you know, half page sort of history of Lovecraft and, you know, the people, Clark Ashton Smith, like we talked about and all that stuff. You know, talk about the old ones and kind of, you know, suggesting, oh, hey, you know, if you want a good flavor, read Call of Cthulhu, Whisper in the Darkness, The Mountains of Madness and the Denethor and the Shadow Out of Time. So, you know, most of those are ones that we've now read in these couple episodes. But it was interesting to see sort of like, you know, the art and the stat blocks for, you know, Cthulhu and Azathoth and like all these.
I do kind of wonder, I mean, has anybody gone through and made role-playing games out of, say, Jane Austen? I mean, I actually believe somebody probably did.
And by now, most assuredly.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, it would not surprise me that much if somebody said, oh, yeah, no, absolutely, you know.
What's your income? Like, well, you know.
Wait a minute. Okay, no, we've got to check out. If nobody else has done this, we have to do this.
Just for completeness's sake?
Just for completeness's sake. It's the new Rule 34. If there isn't a role-playing game based on it, then you know what you have to do.
Exactly. And so the funny thing is, including the ones you would expect, like Shub Niggurath and, you know, some of the ones from the stories that we've read, they actually mention the Great Race.
Right, which is, just, you know, based on the context of Lovecraft, it's just like bizarre to hear him talk about the Great Race.
Yes. And the Great Race, no, it's not human. The Great Race is about 10-foot tall cylinder, the 10-foot wide and 10-foot tall. They have four sort of like pseudopods that come out of their top, and they're basically the ones from the Shadow Out of Time that, you know, they time travel by projecting their consciousness through time and sort of, you know, inhabiting another body in the future or past.
Right.
And so that was one of my favorite stories, actually, for that reason. Just the time travel thing was sort of interesting. And then at the end, you get this basically a dungeon crawl. So that was kind of like, you know, just a flavor addition to D&D if nothing else. But it was funny that they actually have a stat block for this and they have a picture and you're just like, wow, okay.
I also like to point out that they're lawful neutral.
That is pretty funny.
Oh boy. Okay. All right. So, are we ready for favorite scenes?
I believe
yes.
So.
Okay. Barry?
So I don't know if I had a favorite scene. I think I had like some favorite stories. You know, earlier I sort of mm-hmm. mentioned the Outsider, but I also like the Shadow Out of Time quite a bit, mostly because it sort of gave a lot of backstory to, you know, what these alien races and gods are sort of doing, right? So, you know, Kevin was just mentioning the great race people who were sort of traveling in space and time by, you know, swapping brains with humans, right?
Right. I like the overall conceit there. It seemed to me like the twist was kind of like, and the murderer was the murderer all along. I mean, I didn't really understand why. I mean, okay, maybe it's just because, okay, it's a Lovecraft story. I didn't believe for a second that it was just this guy happened to have this.
That he went crazy.
Well, that this guy happened to go crazy.
You never believe that they just went crazy. They do go crazy, but for good reason.
I mean, to me, it's their version of science, right?
Sure.
I think that's one of the reasons why it appealed to me. And it also, you know, by providing that sort of backstory and framework, you know, as a gamer, right? It's fodder for, you know, making your own storylines and things like that.
Right. And I thought that was interesting too, because this is one of the stories where he kind of really goes off the rails as far as like, and then there was, you know, he talks about that one paragraph, all the, you know, when his brain was projected into the past or future, wherever it was, there are all the other captive people who are currently being swapped out. And so it's like, and then there was the half plant creature from Venus and the whatever from this 4 million years in the head, you know, and of course there was one of the, you know, the post-human beetle race people there. And like, it was, so I thought that was kind of interesting that it just completely went, you know, because occasionally he kind of goes crazy, like completely like not related to any science at all and just kind of makes up stuff, right?
Yes. I mean, my problem with Lovecraft is a basic feature of his writing. I don't like the huge brain dumps that he does of, oh, okay, to understand the last three paragraphs of my story, you have to read this. It's five encyclopedia set of that I've written about this, you know, ancient and future fictional race. And it's just like, okay, by the time we're done with this, it's obvious that this isn't just this guy being wacky.
I know, because that is one thing I noticed that happened in more than one story was the character saying, well, I might just be crazy, you know, I don't know if there's any of this really happened, I hope it didn't, because if it did, it's really bad.
Right.
And so that wasn't just like the one time, so that was another like conceit that he seems to do.
And I mean, it really wasn't, I didn't have any problem with the conceit itself, it was the pacing of it. And you know, once again, I just was starting to lose a little bit of patience after binging so much of it.
So what you're saying is that we have an opportunity here to slice this up into chapters and specific books and which order to read them in, much like they did for Star Wars to make it more enjoyable.
Good job. Well, I will say that is kind of the one downside of a mythos is that it helps if you've read a lot of other of his stories, because you kind of already are familiar with parts of it.
Right.
You know, there's definitely like Tolkien, like the first time you read the Silmarillion, you're like half the time you're like, what the hell is going on?
Yes.
This makes no sense.
I still regard you lending me that tape as an attempt to kill me.
That wasn't it at all. Yeah. But after I've read it five times now, it's like, you know, look at the depth of this now, you know, because you're familiar with the whole world by, you know, for the first page. So when he mentions one thing, you're like, oh, I know the backstory to that. And now this one little tidbit that I didn't notice before, you know, adds this new bit.
He changed people's names every three pages.
Oh, yes. I'm not defending that part.
Snorblal, who among the dwarves was Snorblaklan.
Yes. I guess I'm saying that you really have to go all in to really enjoy it, you know?
Wow.
Just like, well, after you hit yourself the first 10 times, then you start really feeling good about it.
Yeah. That swing, you just get good at the swing. Like
a couple of joints and a half dozen shots and it all starts to make sense.
Yeah.
And or you just stop caring.
And I don't know, like I said before too, the Shadow of Time had that kind of dungeon crawl at the end where they're, you know, he's kind of going through this, you know, he finds, you know, he pulls across the rubble and like, you know, goes in, he's like, am I crazy? I guess so. I'm doing it. And like, he goes in with his torch and like, you know, is going through the, you know, the different levels. And at one point he's like, how is it that I know that, you know, one level below on the left was a blue vase? And how is it that
you could possibly know that? Oh, that's right. You explained it 20 times.
Yeah, I know. So there, he's really like, you know, yes, I'm not crazy, but just in case, let me reiterate that.
There's also a bit of a dungeon crawl in the, what is it, underneath the pyramids, under the pyramids.
Right. So
it sort of has like this
wild
adventure.
I got about halfway through before understanding that this was actually supposed to be from the standpoint of Harry Houdini.
Yeah, I didn't, I mean, I understood on the second listen, I will say that it was supposed to be someone who was an escape artist, but I didn't know it was supposed to be.
Literally
Houdini.
Was like a collaboration between the two of them, more or less. It was written under the byline, I think, of Harry Houdini, you know, with help from H.P. Lovecraft.
Interesting.
And the two of them actually became kind of friendly and did some collaboration after that, according, again, to Wikipedia.
It must be true then.
Yeah, it was.
Wow. So then there's a book that definitely needs, like, you know, a two-sentence preface.
Yeah, that would have really helped.
That
or just, you know.
By the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was also, you know, sort of bylined by Harry Houdini. And so, you know, the whole thing makes much more sense as to, oh, well, people thought I was actually claiming to be a real magician and they kept on talking about my escape techniques.
Right. Yeah, I didn't get that at first, and then I did kind of see what they're talking about, but that would have helped if they had said, yes, he wrote this with Houdini, and hey, he's supposed to be talking about Houdini. Yeah, I guess was it the Haunter of the Dark, the one with the you know, the weird...
The Haunter of the Dark is the one that I couldn't remember afterwards.
Yeah, well, I guess I was going to say that was another one.
Because it was indescribable and unnameable.
Well, that was one that they, you know... There was the artifact in the dark that when it was exposed to light, suddenly it let some weird creatures like come through or something. And
yes.
And that was one that I thought was at least like another like RPG module kind of thing. It wasn't a dungeon crawl, but, you know.
Yeah, it's basically a race to keep something in the dark.
Right.
Or so, to keep light on it, actually, in this case.
But, right. So
things
I guess
things don't come through. So, you know, you better call the power company and beg them to turn the juice back on.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm asking is for someone to take all of Lovecraft and turn it into role-playing games. And guess what? That's been done.
Yes, it is.
It's one of the most popular games of our era.
I will have to say probably my favorite, especially for sure the only laugh out line I had in the entire book was from the Shun House. And the line is, in 10 minutes, my mind was made up, and taking my hat, I set out for home, where I bathed, ate, and gave by telephone an order for a pickaxe, a spade, a military gas mask, and 6 carboys of sulfuric acid, all to be delivered the next morning at the cellar door of the Shun House in Benefit Street. I mean, even at the time, that just seems like, oh, luckily you can just like call up the general store and order like, you know, 6 carboys of acid in a gas mask. And like, you know, what are you going to do with those? You know, they don't know. It's fine. Go ahead. I mean, but imagine that now where it's just like, sure, I want something to bury something or dig up something and a bunch of stuff to melt something and just put it, you know, near the cellar door of this house that's not mine, just down the street. Okay, sounds good. You know, it's just like,
I mean, the weirdest version of ordering a pizza for somebody else.
Exactly. What do they want? Oh no, 6 carboys. That's quite a bit.
Cilantro and pineapple pizza, please.
Well, let's see. I actually had to look up what a carboy was. It's basically just, you know, a big jug, and it was like 19 gallons is your standard carboy.
It's pretty big, yeah.
Yeah.
They used to make beer and apparently holds sulfuric acid.
Hope you don't mix those up.
You'll know after the first sip.
Yes.
Let's see. Was there tea? If so, it was indescribable in nature?
Yes, there was, but it was tea. Unnameable, so much so he didn't name it.
Exactly.
The phrase tea did not appear when I grabbed through the
stuff. Must have been Earl Grey.
Yes. Other memorable moments, there was one scene in the music of Eric Zahn. So much of Lovecraft, I started to enliven it by reading double entendres into it. And so in the music of Eric Zahn, the narrator told him that I wanted to know him and be with him when he played.
Yeah, I quietly in the back of my mind was like, do you mean in the biblical sense?
And it's just like, okay, I think I understand one reason why the guy would not be like, oh, okay,
come on in.
Eric Zahn is one of those names that's actually important if we read the Charlie Strauss Laundry series. I didn't realize before reading this how much Charlie Strauss is actually set in the Cthulhu mythos. It's not just sort of making fun riffs off of it. It's actually based in the world.
Huh, that's interesting.
I do believe one of those is on our list.
Because Eric Zahn gets mentioned at some certain points in there.
That's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
I guess I wanted to mention, just because it's, you know, it's probably the most popular of this section, is the Dunwich Horror. It's probably his novella length one, or maybe full novel length if it's a novel of that time.
And I did rather like that, especially because in that one, the villain had at least, you know, a motive. It wasn't a good motive, but he was sort of like, oh, okay, if we do this, then I'll become ruler of the world, not just...
Right. He's the spawn of... Was it Shoggoth or whatever?
Yogg-Sothoth.
Yogg-Sothoth. Yeah, you're right. In fact, that was mentioned in the Deviant Demigod specifically. I mean, this, the Dunwich Horror by name, said, hey, you should read this.
Glad that you mentioned that.
I know you're glad. You want to hear more about it?
I'm glad that you're glad that I'm glad.
Hey, Stephen, have you heard of this Appendix N thing?
No, I have not.
It's right after the letter before N.
It's the nth appendix you've had removed.
Yes. I got a lot of those dang things. They keep growing back.
Well, N could also be 0 or 1, possibly 2.
Yes.
Well, I guess we have reached the point of the evening where we realize that the hideous monster was only our reflection in the mirror all the time. And if that surprises you, you haven't been listening recently.
Why are there tentacles on my forehead?
Why not? Until next time, we are Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.